Welcome to the Mini Break, your daily podcast for the biggest storylines, results, and controversies from the tennis world. Today is Monday, May 4th. There was so much news given out from the professional tennis world this past weekend that that's going to be the focus of today's podcast. Of course, we had the return, sort of live tennis on Tennis Channel, the Tennis Point Exhibition Series going all weekend long. That's being played in Germany right now, an indoor event in abbreviated format. Of course, I want to talk about that as well as some of the other events we have coming up on the tennis schedule because, again, slowly but surely, we are starting to see events emerge around the globe. So I'm going to talk about that. I want to talk about the state of professional tennis as well because more information is trickling out from events throughout the globe, whether it's cancellations, postponements. But in particular, we got some big news about the majors this past weekend, decisions going on at the French Open, whether or not they would play, what circumstances have to look like for them to make the decision to go on ahead with the tournament. We also learned a lot about the U.S. Open and the U.S. Open's plans for moving forward, what they need to see, whether the event would be moved elsewhere in the country outside of New York, if circumstances make it impossible to play there, whether they would hold the event if there were fans or not. We learned more information. We got a statement from the U.S. Open that I want to read through as well. And then, you know, there are a lot of good think pieces. So many great members of the tennis media world are coming out with just fantastic content for all of us tennis fans to talk about, to consider as we, you know, sit through a quarantine moment when there's not much live tennis for us to discuss. There are a lot of still great stories for us to monitor throughout the tennis world, whether it's player comebacks, players dealing with injuries, player relief funds. We got Andy Murray with Christian Amanpour. That was a fun conversation. Lots of good content this weekend, so I want to run you through all of that on today's podcast. And the reason I'm able to do that day in, day out here on the Mini Break is because of the support we get from our friends at Midwest Sports. And for more than 20 years, Midwest Sports has served as one of the world's premier tennis equipment suppliers. They offer a comprehensive selection of fast shipping tennis supplies that few retailers can match. They also have one of the largest in-stock inventories of tennis equipment online with tens of thousands of products available for shipping from them to you. They value innovation and have personally tailored their products to highlight your skills on the court. Their well-trained staff are intimately familiar with tennis equipment and can help you find that perfect tennis racket, tennis shoe, or tennis clothing that is sure to put you ahead of the competition. Their selections of tennis equipment are consistently first to market, and they pride themselves in stocking their tennis warehouse with the newest products at the lowest prices. So what you're going to want to do, go to their website, MidwestSports.com. You're going to find their vast selection, again, from Nike, Adidas, Asics, Babolat, Head, K-Swiss, Yonex, Wilson, and more. You're going to find the sort of gear you need, whether it's rackets, shoes, equipment, clothing, you know, apparel, all of those different things. You're going to find it on their website, MidwestSports.com. You're going to like what you see. You're going to want to bring it home because, again, you want to be prepared for when tennis comes back and when, obviously, none of us want to play until it's safe and healthy for sure. But the second it does, you're going to want to be prepared. So you're going to go to their store. You're going to find the things you like. You're going to use our promo code CR15 to get 15% off your order. Let them know that you are coming from us here at Cracked Rackets. And all orders over $75 will be accompanied with free two-day shipping. So go to MidwestSports.com. Use that promo code CR15. Get 15% off all of your tennis needs. It really is your one-stop shop for all of your tennis shopping desires. Go to MidwestSports.com, promo code CR15, and thank you again to them for their continued support of this podcast. Okay, with that being said, let's get into the news. And the place, again, I want to start, because we had the return of live tennis. And yes, we've had little pieces of tennis spring up across the globe before this already. And in fact, on Friday, Christopher Clary of the New York Times wrote a really good article about all the exhibition matches that have begun to surface called "Tennis Coming Back Slowly with Exhibition Matches. The small-scale events could create a roadmap to help the men's and women's tours return." And look, he talks to a bunch of different people people from throughout the tennis world, talks to some of the people participating in these events. Tennis Sandgren, who's going to participate in the UTR Pro Match Series, which begins this upcoming weekend. That's another thing for all of us tennis fans to look forward to. Talks about how much he's itching to just get back on the court. And, you know, they talk to Mark Leschly, who is the chairman and chief executive of Universal Tennis. He says, "We're trying to bring pro tennis back on linear TV, and we're doing it in a way that is super safe." And look, Chris explains, part of the wave of competition, they're trying to fill some of the void created by the absence of the professional tennis tours. And he discusses, again, the International Tennis Series, which has been in Florida, that's been on ESPN3. He talks about the Tennis Point Exhibition Series, which we saw this weekend on Tennis Channel in Germany. That features players like Dustin Brown and Jana Konefman. By the way, Jana Konefman has looked spectacular this weekend, and that's a guy who was obviously a four-year college player at USC, cracked the top 100, got injured, but he's just so solid, just so well-rounded. And I think they're playing indoors on clay, but he moves the ball well. He can attack, play aggressively. He is like 6'5", so he's got the big weapons as well. I know he's 27 years old probably at this point, but I continue to think Jana Konefman has the potential to crack the top 50 during some course of his career, some point in his career. And look, Christopher, Clary talks about Christopher. I don't really know him on a first name basis, so we'll say Clary talks about some of the other events that are coming soon as well. Patrick Mortelou's events, Rafa Nadal's events, and so much more. And the idea is that, talk about why small-scale events, the risks are minimal, and there's little chance of direct contact between players. There's not going to be fans. There's not going to be handshakes. They're going to take all of these steps they can take to minimize the risk for these players. And, you know, it's not the biggest prize money, but a lot of these players are just getting appearance fees for showing up. And those appearance fees, especially right now when so many of these players ranked in particular outside the top 50, outside the top 100 in total, don't know when they're going to get their next tournament check. Those appearance fees will pay a lot of bills. So it's not shocking to see these sorts of events again pop up. And it's also going to be fun to see the innovation for the Tennis Point Exhibition Series. They're playing no ad scoring. It's the same as the next gen format, shorter sets, tiebreaker at 3-all. Sets are 2-4. As I mentioned, no ad scoring, very minimal prize money. But, you know, it's just interesting to see the innovation. It'll be interesting to see how tennis fans respond to the no ad scoring as a college tennis fan. And I'm sure some of you Cracked Rackets are college tennis fans as well. We're a bit used to that, but it's definitely, you know, it's different. It's quicker, and it's just the sort of fix, I think, at this point of tennis we all need. And as long as they're doing these, you know, safely and healthily, these events, conducting these events, we have no reason but to be fans of them. It's spectacular, and shout out to the efforts of so many right now who continue to try and put on these exhibition events. And until we get pro tennis back, and yes, they are exhibition events, anyone trying to sell them as anything more, I'm sorry, you're being disingenuous. But tennis for the sake of tennis at this point is very much appreciated. Everyone wants to see a result that they're not used to. Yeah, it's been fun going on YouTube, taking deep dives, going back in time. I've been on a Juan Carlos Ferrero binge as of late that I've particularly enjoyed, but it's great to see all of these players, you know, get some matches in, stay in shape, have fun and compete. Dustin Brown, you know, there's no crowd at the event, but Dustin Brown hits a couple of winners per match and he's celebrating to the non-existent crowd. It's really fun. So hopefully we get to see more of these events continue to exist. And, you know, it's funny because Christopher Clary, again, I really recommend you go read his piece in the New York Times. He talks about the potential issues with integrity. Is it possible to gamble on these matches even though they're not official tour events? The answer is yes. And the ATP has talked about the elevated risk. He quotes Mark Harrison, a spokesman for the integrity unit, when he says they will still be subject to anti-corruption rules. And the tennis integrity unit has issued guidance to players in this respect. So a lot of interesting little tidbits going on from this event. And again, we are part of the Tennis Channel Podcast Network. To any of you out there who have Tennis Channel, the last, I believe, of the first Tennis Point Exhibition Series, which will be a 12-day event split up over three sessions. The first session ends today, so hopefully you guys got to check out the ending of those matches. The next one will be May 7th to the 10th, the third May 14th to the 17th. So be on the lookout for all that. It's been really fun, as I mentioned, to watch tennis return. And As I mentioned as well, the My UTR event starting this weekend on Tennis Channel as well. And for those of you who are wondering, when can I get back and play out there recreationally? What is it looking like? What is the guidance the USTA is issuing to tennis players across the globe? From Colette Lewis's Tennis Kalamazoo blogspot, more information continues to be released. The NCAA chief medical officer offered his roadmap for what needs to happen to ensure that college athletics can return and safely return when concerns for the global pandemic obviously die down. He talks about how they have to stick to the core principles for resuming practice and competition at the collegiate level. He says they are meant to be consistent with the federal guidelines and otherwise reflective of the best available scientific and medical information available at the time. These core principles are intended as resources for our member schools to use in coordination with the federal guidelines and related institutional and local governmental decision-making, all of which remain subject to further revision as available data and information in this space continues to emerge and evolve. What does that mean? Much like everything else, college athletics and the resumption of practice schedules still very much in flux, but it's good that they're following the science, follow the health, concerns, the health guidelines, because we never want to rush things back just for the sake of being back out there. The USTA also announced that the status of the national clay court events in July, the national hard court events in August, still up in the air. There have not been any definitive postponements nor cancellations, but it does say, you know, as of now, all tournaments are canceled through May 31st, and, you know, while there are some that remain open for events following the 31st, keep into consideration the schedule might change. Entry fee refunds and credits are being handled directly by host tournaments. And then the big ones, National Clay Court Championships. They will have a formal announcement on May 15th. They're still scheduled to conduct themselves in the National Hard Court, still scheduled for now. They'll hear another announcement on that on June 1st. So that's what's going on in the junior circuit. On the professional level, again, things continue come out. Information continues to be given. The French sports minister, Roxana Maracanau, I definitely butchered that pronunciation, but I will say this. How in America do we not have a sports minister? That feels like an easy fix. That feels like two pieces of legislation. That might be the only thing that could pass both the U.S. House and Senate unanimously at this point. Why wouldn't you have a sports minister? Isn't this what this is exposing? That clearly, you know, it's funny, you look back, Rudy Gobert getting sick, testing positive, shutting down the NBA. Was that really the moment that spearheaded all of the shutdowns across the globe? And had a professional athlete not tested positive, would the country have shut down as soon? Well, you could argue whether it was too soon, too late. We don't have to do that on this podcast, but would it have shut down at all? It's a really good question. And so I feel like a sports minister would have use given how big the industry is, how influential it is across this country in particular. So interesting that, again, that gets me off topic. The point is the French sports minister says that the rescheduled Tour de France and French Open are still a possibility in December, but that they won't be staged without spectators. They will be held only if fans are permitted. And that's obviously a very fascinating detail as professional tennis continues to weigh whether whether it should come back as a product if there are no fans out there in to be seen. How much do gate receipts apply? You know, how much of the income for tournaments, how much of the income for all of these events are gate receipts? And it's interesting to say, because we found out, and this is from at @AnnaK_forever, sponsorships sit behind gate receipts but ahead of TV rights in the Rogers Cup sources revenue. So that's number two, right? Ahead of TV rights. So the whole idea is, well, if we're playing tennis, people will be watching and we can still get paid. Well, you know, and we'll still have the sponsorships. But gate receipts are number two. You know, that's how they're making all of their money. And so the idea of them playing these events with all of the costs and not reaping the benefits of having spectators there or having concessions, I don't know if any tournament in Europe, in the USA, particularly at the highest scales, are going to want to do that if, you know, as opposed to running the operation, if they're going to make enough money to run the operation without gate receipts. So again, that's just another interesting detail to hear. And we heard, you know, for the US Open, we've heard multiple conflicting reports. They're obviously weighing a lot of different considerations, but would they move the U.S. Open to Indian Wells if they thought California was in a better place to resume, or I should say conduct a professional sporting event like this as opposed to New York? And the USTA's target date right now for a decision from Michael Samulski on whether to hold this year's U.S. Open is mid-June. Current plans to organize as scheduled as with fans, and there is no consideration of moving the location. But again, that keeps getting, I suppose that statement becomes less and less definitive. And it's a credit to the USTA to being flexible, to being open to various ideas. But, you know, the USTA, right, again, as of now, and this is from a piece in The Guardian, the USTA to decide on U.S. Open by June with no spectators. He quotes Mike Dowse, who took over the USTA on January 1st. He's the CEO, and he says, look, obviously our ambition is to run the tournament. It's the engine that drives our organization, our governing body. Having said that, that won't be the driving factor. The driving factor will be health and well-being of the players, the fans, and our staff. Mike Dowse says, time is on our side at this point, and goes on to say, you know, things are fluid. If medical experts come back and say, here's a foolproof way of running a very safe tournament, unfortunately, it has to be without fans, we may consider and look at it. But obviously, for now, the thing they want to do is hold it with fans. And, you know, this article talks about why tennis tournaments are more dependent on ticket, merchandise, concession sales as a percentage of revenue than other major professional sports leagues. And, you know, Michael Dowse also, again, discusses what the USTA plan is to do to help all of those athletes, help all of those tennis clubs across the country stay afloat during this time of crisis. Because in this article, Dowse goes on to say 85% of tennis facilities around the United States were closed. You know, it's estimated to be closer to 90 now. And he discusses the $50 million in commitment the USTA has made to other, to all various different causes across the country, tennis related, you know, stripping $15 million from its budget by reducing salaries and eliminating programs in player development and marketing. So yeah, there are a lot of moving pieces, all of it right now very fluid, certainly, but again, we are starting to see more and more details emerge. And finally, the USTA, after all the speculation, released a statement on Friday. The USTA's goal is to hold 2020 U.S. Open in New York on its currently scheduled dates. In fact, our plans to stage the U.S. Open on our scheduled dates at the Billie Jean King National Tennis Center with fans remain ongoing. However, we recognize that we are all facing an uncertain and rapidly changing environment regarding the COVID-19 pandemic, and therefore have been aggressively modeling many other contingencies, including scenarios with no fans. We understand that there is a great deal of speculation regarding the USTA's planning for 2020. We would like to clarify that while we are exploring every possibility around the U.S. Open, the potential to shift the event location or date is not at the forefront at this point in time. Again, right now, all intents and purposes, and this isn't the quote, this is me, are to hold that at the event at the Billie Jean King National Tennis Center, is to hold the event in New York. But, you know, like they say, paramount with all of our decisions, and this is getting back, paramount, not my word, but paramount with all our decisions regarding the U.S. Open, we will be the health and safety of all those involved in any capacity with the tournament. Continual contact with New York State and New York City officials and agencies, and are meeting weekly with their medical advisory group to learn as much as they can to properly assess the shifting situation. At this moment, our target date for a decision regarding the U.S. Open is 6 to 8 weeks away. That's mid-June. We will continue to provide updates as appropriate. So, again, lots of fluid pieces. What are my initial reaction to that? A, it's clear, given the significance to the season, given the significance to the USTA as an organization in general, they will do whatever they can to play a U.S. Open this season. And of course, that requires so many different pieces, the health and safety and the waiving of travel restrictions across the globe. And is it even going to be possible? Are the ATP or WTA tours going to be back by that point? We don't know at this time, but it's clear that the USTA is, again, being flexible. They're trying to figure out various contingencies to ensure the event can happen, and given its importance to the tennis calendar, great shot to them. I'm happy to hear that. I would watch, regardless of where they hold that, they want to do it in Miami, they want to do it in Indian Wells, they want to do it in some private court backyard and play all of these matches and expand it to 5 months, or, you know, a 5 week event and keep everyone in quarantine. Whatever they think they can execute, go for it at this point. And I'm glad to see again that they continue to be creative with solutions. But we continue to learn more and more about the financial windfall of the coronavirus pandemic, its effects on local tournaments, and all of these players obviously ranked outside of the top 100 as well. And Ravi Uba for tennis.com wrote a fantastic piece on the tennis calendar and the concerns and how tournaments are significantly going to struggle by not having an event this season. And he quotes Marin Cilic in his piece talking about how Cilic says he's in favor of pay freezes at the big events. He's in favor of, it truly is a redistribution of the prize money from the top events, which do generate the majority of the revenue, to the smaller ones, the 250s, the 125Ks, maybe even eventually the Challenger and Futures circuit, to ensure that tennis remains healthier from top to bottom, to ensure that it's not just the top players that receive the windfall of higher gate receipts and higher TV deals, higher revenue. And so, he's not the only one who says it. Sam Stosur talks about how tournaments are going to struggle to stay afloat. And he gets the chairman, Andrea Gaudenzi, quoting in here, and how they're looking at all of the options. And he just talks about how the economy for tennis has, significantly been affected. And look, Sam Stosur is honest. She says they don't have a bottomless pit of cash that they can pay out to all of these various players, but they are trying to get creative, trying to ensure that financial relief goes out to not just the players and the but the tournaments and all of the organizations that will continue to be affected by this, and try and ensure that tennis doesn't lose too many events as a result, that they can't come back because of their financial situations. Because if that's the case, if there are less events on the calendar, that's not good for anyone. So it's a really good piece by Ravi Uba. You should all go check out on tennis.com. Again, with tennis calendar, his top concern, Cilic open to prize money cuts. That's the article, but it really goes into much more than just that headline. So be sure to go check that out. And of course, again, in terms of the player relief fund, we learn more and more details today. I think it was on Friday, ATP CEO Massimo Calvelli came out and said good progress is being made. We are finalizing criteria for player eligibility for financial support. We hope to be in a position to confirm those details shortly. And of course, we will be on the lookout for all of those details. But for those of you who forget, it's top players in the top 100 in descending order are asked to give a little more money, depending on how highly ranked you are, a little less if you're a little lower ranked, and contribute their own funds on top of funds raised from all of the various events, all of the various tennis organizations across the globe, to try and get the players ranked between 200 and 800 if they qualify for the criteria, somewhere around $10,000 for now, to keep them afloat. And again, we've talked about the criticisms, the nuances. Are the top players contributing enough money? Could they afford to contribute more? Is this the best fashion to distribute all of this money, all of these relief funds? And, again, the top players have gotten criticism, but Stuart Frazier, at Stu Frazier, I thought made a really good point this weekend on tennis Twitter. Of course, the top players could afford to contribute more, but you do have to bear in mind the other considerable donations the Federers, the Djokovic, the Nadals of the world are making, whether it be to the coronavirus, just all of their charitable expenditures. And so, they're still trying to do their best, and we see all of them continue to say maybe we do need to commit more. Some have pushed back, and we've talked about them notably. We talked about Dominic Thiem's comments a bunch last week, but it's an interesting it's obviously a tremendously difficult situation for all of these players, but it's something to continue to monitor. And it was really interesting because you talk about the player relief fund and you start to talk about, of course, the ATP WTA merger talks and all of the financial implications of those. Christian Amanpour on CNN actually had both Billie Jean King and Andy Murray on her show this weekend for a fascinating discussion on pay equity, on merger talks, on for Andy Murray, what it's like for him to be in quarantine after spending all of this time on the road. And, they're really good interviews, and I do think, they're particularly good pieces. I do want, Westhoff, if you could, share the clip here of Murray talking about what it's like for him to be at home right now.
I want to ask Andy, as a finely tuned champion machine right now, what is it like to be, off work and off the court?
Yeah, I don't know about finely tuned. I've had my fair few breakdowns over the last few years, but it's been tough, obviously, tough for everybody just now. But it has also given us the opportunity to, spend time and a lot of time at home with my family, which with my job and the traveling that we usually do, I don't always get that opportunity. So that's been really nice and challenging at times, trying to, teach and educate my children, which, you know, our teachers usually do that for us. It's been hard as well, but I've enjoyed large parts of it. It's been quite special to have this time with my family as well. But obviously, yeah, tough not to just be able to go out and socialize and do things aside from the tennis and sport, which obviously is an important part of our life. There's, you know, just living really and going out to restaurants and, you know, having your usual freedoms and not having them has been tough.
It was a really good interview. And even beyond, you know, just the personal experience, it was fascinating to hear Murray's thoughts. And just, again, he's one of the best proponents for equal pay, for ensuring that the prize money is properly distributed, in my opinion, throughout all of tennis, because he just has such a clear sense of, you know, what needs to be considered as these sorts of discussions are taking place. And I'm going to read his quote real quickly. But he says, you know, I've had sometimes conversations in the past where there have been prize money increases within the sport where, let's say, the first round loser's check for the men went to $8,000 to 10, the women's $6,000 to 10,000. And he spoke to some of the male players about that who were unhappy because the prize money was equal. And he said, you know, I said, being Murray, well, would you rather there was no increases at all? And these players said to me, yeah, actually. And that's some of the mentalities you're working with in these discussions, where someone would rather make less money so they are not on equal footing with female players. So there will be some challenges. And again, that's a candid insight into the perspective of what this discussion is going to look like, how difficult it will be to convince some players on tour that this is beneficial net, you know, for tennis for the long term. And he says, but look, I think when you have obviously a lot of top male players starting to discuss it and talk about it, that's definitely very promising. But I think it's really important in these negotiations that when it comes to the key decision makers right now in tennis, pretty much all of them are men. And I think when these discussions happen, it's quite important not to see this merger through a man's eyes and to bring more women into the decision making positions, that everybody's voice gets heard and everybody gets protected in these discussions. And I think if that happens, we have a huge potential as a sport. I already think it's a very special sport because of what we already have, but I think it could be even better. And once again, Andy Murray put something better than I ever could. So be sure to go check out that interview with Christiane Amanpour if you want to hear more about him, about Billie Jean King's perspective. Just watching the two of them, two of our brightest minds in tennis history, interact is well worth a 9-minute, 10-minute conversation. So I think all of you will get to enjoy that. I think all of you will also enjoy Lindsey Gibbs's article in Power Plays on the WTA ATP merger talks and why it's essential that the WTA protect its power, that it be considered. And it, you know, she talks about the ramifications of the financial windfall, and she does say, you know, why tennis negotiating as one, and makes the point that I think Adrian Gaudenzi made as well, the ATP president, of, you know, be able to negotiate with media rights, to be able to negotiate as one cohort, you know, television-wise, that would be massive for the ATP and WTA, and how, as currently constructed, the joint events already make the most money of any events out there in the tennis schedule. So why it makes the most sense to have them together, you know, elsewhere throughout the world. But she also talks about the downside. She talks about why there, you know, there's a reason that the two tours haven't merged, that the competition between the two tours has vacillated much throughout history. There have been times when the ATP players have been very staunch and very adamant that WTA players shouldn't be playing at the same events as them, that the prize money shouldn't be the same, and how to ensure that that doesn't happen in this merger, that WTA and women's players' concerns aren't put on the back fence while, you know, ATP concerns and the ATP tour drives the conversation, and that just ensuring that women are at the table for these discussions. And she makes a lot of poignant points. I think she does an excellent job elaborating what concerns there are. So all of you should go read that again. The WTA must protect its power on powerplay.news. That's at Lynn Sports for those of you who want to find that article. Let's wrap up here with, again, some of the other great things I read this weekend, because there were a lot of good pieces of content from the professional tennis world. We'll start with a piece from David Kane, of the WTA, who got the chance to talk with Sofia Zhuk, the former 15-year-old junior Wimbledon champion from Russia, who was a sensational talent and just so sadly had injuries, you know, over her career succumbed to injuries. She had back problems that she just could not get over, and unfortunately doctors have been unable to figure out if there is, you know, what exactly her treatment is, and it's gone down to, you know, her, you know, from the back to the hips to the shoulders to the scapulas to the knees to the everything. She talks about what a struggle it is and how hard it's been for her to find her identity post tennis, but, you know, slowly but surely how she's starting to find things she, you know, enjoys in her life outside of tennis, and what that process has been like, what it's like to go from being shoveled, you know, from tournament to tournament and never being home to learning how to drive and doing all of the little things that come in daily life. And, you know, for her, just what it's like to be away from tennis and if she would ever want to consider coming back or whether she wants to stay involved with the game. It's a very candid piece and, as always, well written by David Kane. So be sure to go check that out. The title, Zhuk Drives Into Next Chapter During Break from Tennis. I thought it was a fantastic article. I think you guys will also all really enjoy Danielle Collins opening up about her arthritis diagnosis, in UBI Tennis. Again, that's ubitennis.net. The article, My Body Was Cracking and Popping, Danielle Collins opens up on arthritis diagnosis, this article written by Adam Atticott. And again, it's just a very candid interview. She talks about how difficult it was, how she felt the need to play through all of the pain she was suffering because of how competitive tennis is, how you can't afford to take a long break because scheduling-wise, it just doesn't exist. You know, there's no space for it. So really good article. I think all of you will enjoy it. Go check that out for sure. There's also some really fun pieces written by both All About Tennis on the All About Tennis blog as well as from Jury Nathan talking about the video games that we got to see this past week, the Virtual Madrid Open and how it was executed, what, you know, their thoughts on the event as a whole, how it could improve moving forward. You know, good attempt, flawed execution, I would say it was a summary, but they're both really fun pieces, so be sure to go check both of those out. There also, of course, was the Stay at Home Slam, IMG's event, which saw $1 million in prize money go to charity from the winners of that event, Taylor Fritz and I believe Addison Rae. Now, I'm going to be honest, I don't really know who Addison Rae is, and this is probably the oldest I've ever felt doing a podcast, but I will say this, there is not a single shock in my, I'm not shocked at all to find out that Taylor Fritz won a video game event. He might be the best gamer out there. Him, Andy Murray, Kei Nishikori, and Kiki Bertens, because she's undefeated. I mean, yeah, they're not going to lose. And so, you know, him and Addison Rae did not lose in doubles. They knocked off Nishikori and Steve Aoki in the final 6-4. And I'll say this, there was a lot less color commentary, although John McEnroe was there and he was very funny with iJustine, but they let the players shine through much more in this IMG event than they did in the initial Madrid event. And I'll say this, you know, for IMG, they got to see Madrid be the test, the guinea pig, I suppose, is the term to go with. And so, you know, it was clear they cleaned things up. The stream quality was a little bit higher. They had all four players on the screen. They were the focus of the match. And so it was really cool to be seen. And by the way, on top of the $1 million, all of the participants who played the video games from their home each received $25,000 to be donated to the charity of their choice. So fantastic effort, a fantastic cause, well executed. And I'm going to be honest, Mario Tennis Aces continues to be a fun video game to watch. So shout out to IMG and everyone at the Stay at Home Slam for executing that. I also really enjoyed watching the piece on Tennis Channel about the Stanford men's tennis program, about what Dick Gould, Paul Goldstein, and all of the people there have done to build such an esteemed program and why it's esteemed, all of the players who have filtered through over the years, the facilities. It's gorgeous, and not that anyone ever needed an incentive to say, hey, I should go to Stanford if I can, but if you can, go to Stanford. And speaking of people who went to Stanford, shout out last but not least to Mike Bryan, who had a new, congratulations to him, a baby born for him this week, another son, his son Jake. Mazel tov. Hopefully that son, the family are staying safe, staying healthy. As the son of an OB-GYN, hearing that sort of news will always resonate with me. So shout out to you, Mike Bryan. But that will do it. Like I said, 32 minutes of news. There was a lot to discuss from the weekend in tennis, and hopefully you guys are still up to date on all of the professional storylines. But if you want to hear more about the player relief funds and what that's starting to look like, you want to hear more about the ATP-WTA merger, you want to know how the coronavirus pandemic is going to affect the professional tennis schedule, the college tennis schedule, be sure to go back and listen to some of the past episodes we have done on this mini-break podcast. We have had so many fantastic conversations with people from throughout the tennis world. People like, of course, Mark Lucero, John Wertheim, Ben Rothenberg, Steve Weissman, Paul Anacone, Christian, who sits on the WTA Player Council, Mitchell Krueger, who's been very candid about both, you know, his criticisms and his compliments for the Player Relief Fund and what it's starting to look like. So you can check all of that out again in our previous mini break conversations. We've also had, you know, again, a lot of cracked interviews conversations with players from throughout the tennis world to see how they are handling this situation, and from the college tennis world as well. People like, you know, Dennis Kudla, Bethany Maddox Sands, Claire Liu. I mentioned Mitchell Krueger already, but we had Chris Woodruff on, former top 30 player turned Tennessee men's tennis head coach. We had Tim Russell on, the CEO of the ITA, to discuss the future of college tennis. So a bunch of fun conversations I think all of you will enjoy. Be sure to go like, rate, subscribe, review to this podcast, the Cracked Interviews podcast, and the Great Shot podcast. And by the way, on the Great Shot podcast, we had the chance to talk to Midwest Sports rep Dave Limke about Midwest Sports, our partnership with them, how all of you guys are, why all of you guys should turn to Midwest Sports for any of your I suppose tennis needs. And again, shout out to them as always for their continued support of this podcast. Shout out as always as well to our super producers Max Fleener and Daniel Westhoff for the of an any job they have to do day in, day out. Super producer Daniel Westhoff, by the way, killing it on our YouTube channel, which all of you should go subscribe to so that you won't miss an episode of Overserved, an episode of CR Classics, or all of the other fantastic tennis content he is doing on there. So again, be sure to go check that out. And as I mentioned, shout out to our friends at Midwest Sports. Go to MidwestSports.com. Use that promo code CR15, 15% off all of your orders. But with that being said, for my wonderful producers, Daniel Westhoff and Max Fleener. I almost called them Daniel Fleener and Max Westhoff. Let's try that one more time. For our incredible super producers, Max Fleener and Daniel Westhoff, our friends at Midwest Sports, and all of us here at both Cracked Rackets and the Tennis Channel Podcast Network, I'm your host, Alex Gruskin. You know what we say, folks? That's the break, and we'll see you all tomorrow. Thanks, everyone.